Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with hopeful signs of a thaw in the intractable relationship between the United States and Iran, following encouraging words from Iran's new president, Hassan Rouhani, who said his exchange of letters with President Obama has been positive and constructive. Middle East expert Rasul Nafisi joins us to discuss Iran's behind-the-scenes brokering of the Russian-American deal on Syria and to analyze the new tone ahead of Rouhani's visit to New York next week. Then we'll examine the bankrolling of the radicals in the House of Representatives who have steamrolled their leadership into agreeing to shut down the government unless Obama's signature achievement that was voted into law and upheld by the Supreme Court is defunded. Zephyr Teachout, a professor of law at Fordham University and the former national director of the Sunlight Foundation, joins us to discuss the role of the Koch brothers in turning the Tea Party from a populist movement into a congressional caucus of strident shills for right-wing plutocrats. Then finally, we will assess the impact of the Pope's remarks that the Catholic Church is obsessed with abortion, gay marriage, and contraception and should not interfere spiritually in the lives of gays and lesbians. Marianne Duddy Burke, the executive director of Dignity USA, the leading organization of LGBT Catholics, and Francis Kissling, the former president of Catholics for Choice, join us to discuss how Pope Francis's words might translate into action. And joining us now is Middle East expert Rasul Nafisi. His latest book is The Rise of the Pasdaran, which is about the social, political, and economic roles of the guardians of the revolution in Iran. And his most recent book is The Cultures of the Middle East. He contributes to Jain's Islamic Digest and Jain's Intelligence Digest. Welcome to Background Briefing, Rasul Nafisi.
Thank you for the invitation.
And the new president of Iran, Hassan Rouhani, is coming to the United Nations next week to speak to the General Assembly, but he gave an interview to NBC News, which is getting, I think, a lot of fairly positive response. And since he got elected, he's also been getting a lot of, positive press and saying things that seem to be certainly a change from Ahmadinejad. So let's start with that question. Given that the ultimate power in Iran is with the supreme leader, is this a new face, a friendly face on the same regime, or is this a regime change?
No, it's certainly the friendly face of the regime, because Rouhani is an inside person, and he's been with the security forces of the Islamic Republic from day one. And so he is absolutely an insider. However, he's different from many others in terms of maintaining a certain level of independence. And we know from his book, which is sort of diary of his activities in the area of nuclear security and so on and so forth, that in 2003, he was able to convince Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader, to come to a certain understanding with the West and strike a deal. And he was able to shut down, actually, the nuclear activities to a certain level. So Rouhani is different in terms of the amount of power and knowledge he has, and not only from Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who was psychologically challenged, but even from Khatami, because Khatami did not have that kind of personality and even knowledge. Bear in mind that Rouhani has a degree in law from Tehran University and also has a degree or PhD in constitutional law from a certain university in Glasgow. So he seems to be a knowledgeable man, and especially his pick for foreign department is Mr. Zarif, who is an excellent diplomat. And I think the combination of the two would be really magnificent, because If you look at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in the past, it's been led mostly by radicals, and now you have a very moderate, very Western, highly educated and Western educated, he's a U.S. educated man in charge. So I think the team is magnificent. However, there's a caveat. Since I've been watching Iran for the past 35 years and even though I wrote my doctoral dissertation about Iran, Iranian Revolution, I have been witness of several ups and downs. And normally, when optimism rises and everybody says, well, this time something good will happen, and everybody is braced up for good news, something terrible happens and it stops everything else. In terms of the emergence of Rouhani, Zarif, and their goodwill and all the associated good news with that, I'm not confident that the Russians, Arabs, Israelis, even in Turkey, would like to see the Iranian position buried off in terms of relation with the West. And then, of course, they have influential people inside the country. And again, inside Iran, I'm not sure that the IRGC or the Guardian of Revolution is quite happy to see a rapprochement with the West. So, yes, to answer your question, it is good news that this team is up. It is good news that the better face of the regime is up, and it's certainly not the regime change. But to what extent they can really further their agenda, I'm not quite sure about that.
Again, I'm speaking with Middle East expert Rasul Nafisi. His latest book is The Rise of the Pashtun, which is about the social, political, and economic roles of the guardians of the revolution in Iran. And his most recent book is The Cultures of the Middle East. He contributes to Jain's Islamic Digest and Jain's Intelligence Digest. But still, just in terms of good news, releasing 12 political prisoners, which Rouhani promised to do, that clearly is the good news, particularly for those who were released. A very prominent human rights attorney. She's out of jail, already giving interviews to the BBC. And then you've got Mohsen Aminazadeh, who is a former deputy foreign minister under President Mohammad Khatami. And he, of course, supported the candidate Mousavi in the elections. Of course, he was prevented from running and is, still under house arrest. So it'll be interesting to see whether they get released from house arrest. But what struck me most, apart from his statements about Iran not wanting a nuclear weapon, which frankly is not new, they've been saying that for a long time, and we just simply don't want to believe them. But now maybe we'll believe this guy because he seems like a decent guy. But what I thought was interesting that he said, Rasul, was about the internet and wanting Iranian people to be completely free and have access to information and the right of free dialogue and the right to think freely is the right of all people, including the people of Iran. Now, that, of course, is not necessarily being translated into reality. The internet was open for a while for Facebook and then suddenly shut. So what do you make of that and where does that stand?
Rouhani has made a lot of progressive statements throughout elections in terms of what women can wear and also freedom of information and freedom of universities and just about everything that you wanted to hear from a liberal president. And I have seen some of those slowly being watered down. For example, in terms of women cover in public, he was emphatic that we should not enforce it. We should not force the Islamic hijab on women. I said that on several occasions. Now that he's in power, he said to the morality police that, well, don't go to extremes. And it is like any other politician. He made a lot of good promises that you wanted to hear. Now I'm seeing some watering down of the promises. However, he seems to be quite aware of the fact that in the age of freedom of information, you cannot really curtail access to the internet. And if not now, maybe in 6 months, we see a plethora of activities in terms of freeing the internet and Twitter and Facebook and all that. We will see that for sure because he has a power of convincing Ayatollah Khamenei, as we know, because of what he did in 2003. Now, I'm very hopeful that he can manage some good deeds in the coming 6 months. And he would be a far cry from the radical, fanatic, and occasionally lunatic band of people that were helping Ahmadinejad and Ahmadinejad himself. So it's a great news to have him, but I do not discount the power of forces that are against any kind of liberal activity in the country. IRGC at the center of it.
That's the Iranian Revolutionary Guard.
They really don't want any change in the status quo. And a great number of clerics who are very afraid of any sea change in the country. And they look at the freedom of information as the key to social change and political upheaval. So he will have a very rough time make any changes in the country. But remember, he is an insider. He comes from the security forces. He knows a lot of people. He has worked with a lot of people. So I think he can pull a lot of positive levers and make a country a little bit more livable, especially at this time that people are facing so much hardship because of inflation and unemployment. So,
but that's a result of Western sanctions.
Oh, certainly. And mismanagement by Ahmadinejad. Let's not forget about what he did. He basically shut down the organization of planning and budgetary, which really was the think tank of all the experts. And then it started to throw money away. There is a statement by one of his, ministers who said, sir, you're promising so much money to each and every province. And it seems that you know of some money and some income that we are not aware of. He said, well, the 12th Imam will emerge and he will fix it.
That's the Messiah, right?
That's the Messiah. That's right. The Messiah of Shiites, right? So this is the type of guy you're talking about.
It'd be like having the Reverend Pat Robinson run the United States, right?
Or a little worse, I would say. Okay. Because Pat Robinson even has a certain level of rationality in him.
Right. Well, he certainly likes the money.
Sure for that.
So let's turn, though, to the obvious here, and that is we know what happened under the Liberal President Hotemi, in that was he reached out to the West and he was rebuffed. And even then after the U.S. invasion of Iraq, the Iranians basically came to the White House and said, everything's on the table. We want to negotiate everything. And Dick Cheney said, we don't talk to evil. And he was hung out to dry. And then the hardliners came in. So that's a long-winded way of saying, unless something is achieved relatively quickly with Rouhani and Obama, and they seem to have started an exchange of letters, which Rouhani described Obama's letters as positive and constructive, right, and he's coming here next week. Do you agree that the U.S. and the Iranians should really, this time around, try and move things along, and because the window can close as it's done before?
Absolutely. We have a very small amount of time. We have a very short time for fixing things and also not losing hope in Rouhani from inside Iran and of course, in the West. And he must do something, and he knows that. He must perform. He must achieve result. And I think Obama administration is pretty much at the same juncture, too. They want something to be done, and they love to see this atomic agenda moving forward. But as I said, the forces that are against it are great and too many. And even I'm not, as you can imagine, a very optimistic person. Even when the dilemma of Syria and using chemical weapons there began, in the heart of my heart, I thought, well, maybe somebody did it to, again, force the United States against the closest ally of Iran and force Iran to do something about it and create another conflict, another round of conflict, and prohibit any kind of advancement in the relationship between two countries. So this is the way I look at the reality of affairs between Iran and the United States. And I certainly hope that this team of Rouhani and Zarif would be able to do something about it. Because Rouhani said, now I have the full authority to make changes in our approach to the West and nuclear policy. And I take him for his words. I hope he can do that. But as I said, there are too many forces against it.
But on the Syrian question, there does seem to be a split in Iran between the hardliners and Rouhani, and particularly Rafsanjani, who made a speech recently condemning the Assads for the use of chemical weapons. And that was posted on his website, and then it was taken down. So something's happening there. They seem to be they're talking about not sending arms, sending humanitarian aid to Iran. My understanding is that in many ways, Iran and the United States are a lot closer on this issue over Syria than meets the eye. And also, you mentioned a lot of people in the neighborhood don't want a rapprochement between the U.S. and Iran, principally Israel, Saudi Arabia. You mentioned Turkey. I'm not sure about that. But, you know, so elaborate on that, if you will, of what happened with Rafsanjani and what's going on with Syria and how much the U.S. and Iran, in fact, have in common. Neither of them want to have a bunch of Sunni jihadis running Syria.
Right. What Rafsanjani said in a speech, and it was immediately denied by his office, reflects the feeling of the pragmatists in Iran. Pragmatists like Rouhani, Rafsanjani, Khatami, and many others are saying, look, we have to look inside. We have to stop adventurism outside. We don't have any fight to pick with Israel. That's what Rafsanjani said a couple of months ago. We have no fight with Israel. And they are thinking of just putting a stop to all this adventurism, support even for Hezbollah and others, and start, you know, developing the economy back home, which is in a terrible shape, and the government is bankrupt, doesn't have any money. The oil export is dropped to half, and simple things, simple necessities and food stuff is becoming kind of scarce in the country. So they are putting emphasis on the home front. But on the other hand, you have the IRGC, you have the radicals who are looking at Syria as the line of extending the power of Shiite radicalism all the way to Mediterranean Sea. And Taib, one of the radical clerics, said that in a couple of months ago. He said, Syria is our most important province, even more important than Khuzestan. And remember, Khuzestan is the province of Iran that produces all the oil in the country.
Right.
So to them, Syria, the line to Hezbollah, all of this adventurism outside the country is central to their agenda. But pragmatists like Hashemi Rafsanjani are coming to the conclusion that they better look back home and do something about the misery that is engulfing Iran.
Well, I think it's fair, though, just that perhaps something will happen next week at the UN with Rouhani. It seems like he's laying the groundwork, and these letters with Obama and the positive vibes back and forth. Just in closing, though, Rasul Nafisi, what's your sense of whether or not the Syrian situation is going to torpedo things? Or, I mean, there was somebody, I can't remember who it was, had this theory that Syria could become Iran's Vietnam, that they'll just get bogged down there. It sounds like you're suggesting that's not happening, but there are constituents inside Iran that want to double down. What's your sense in the long run as this U.S.-Russian deal takes place? It could become a model for a U.S.-Russian deal to work on the Iranian question as well.
Remember when Secretary Kerry made a statement in France about the likelihood of coming to peace with Syria if Syria got rid of its chemical weapons? In passing, he said that. And you made it almost impossible, said in 1 week. the country that picked on it was not Russia. It was Iran. Iranians immediately talked to Assad and said, this is a good deal. And they got his agreement, and they immediately went back to Putin and said, look, we cannot announce this because nobody likes us in the world. Why don't you go ahead and make it your agenda and your plan? And Russians accepted that, and they said, well, that's a good idea. Let's do it. And to me, this demonstrates the fact that Iranians are quite aware how dangerous Syria is becoming, and they don't want to have any increasing factors or wars in that country. And certainly, they don't want to be involved. The reason I'm saying they don't want to be involved is because the theory back in Iran is U.S. and the West are using Syria to lure Iran into Syria, and they make it a pretext for attacking Iran. So they are very careful about it. So whether it can become an Iranian Vietnam, I am not quite sure.
Well, I've heard that too, that that's been a strategy, at least amongst hardliners. But it doesn't seem to be the case at the moment. It seems to be heading in a different direction. And I thank you so much for joining us here today, Rasul Nafisi.
You're very welcome. Enjoy the discussion.
Again, I've been speaking with Middle East expert Rasul Nafisi. His latest book is The Rise of the Pashtun, which is about the social, political, and economic roles of the guardians of the revolution in Iran. And his most recent book is The Cultures of the Middle East. He contributes to Jain's Islamic Digest and Jain's Intelligence Digest. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into the Koch brothers' role in funding those who want to shut the government down.